This is a call from Hawaii.
I ho'olohi olu'olu mai o ko I kā mākō meleana.
A ke ho'ona kone mākō I kō mākō aloha nui loa ia o ko apau aloha no.
And here we meet again beneath the mighty Moana banyan tree beside the sea. The great panorama of Waikiki Beach before us. Old Diamond Head at one end, surfboards and outrigger canoes catching the waves out there. Many colors along the shore, a bright and beautiful picture. This is Webley Edwards speaking for all the islanders, for these many mainlanders from so many places, whose voices now rise with us in that traditional shout that begins our songs from the islands. Our aloha, as Hawaii calls.
Live from the snowy cold waste of Chicagoland, we're down where the beer is warm and the chat is cheerful. It's Pubcast from the Brit and Yankee.
Yes, hello everybody and welcome. We're back. This is Pubcast number 9 for February the 18th, 2007. We're at the Brit and the Yankee. I'm Phil Clark, your landlord, and with me is...
Lingo, a.k.a. Mike.
Hello, Lingo. How you doing, my friend?
I am wonderful. Glad to see you made it back safe.
Thank you. I did indeed. And, there we go. Everybody's coming into the pub as usual. Good. I'm glad that they got the doors open in time. We are back and ready to rock and roll. And from 80-degree temperatures that I left in Honolulu last weekend, now we are back here at, what is it, 9 degrees out there? Yeah. Holy cow.
Welcome to reality. Yes. It comes back and slaps you right in the face.
Well, we got lots of fun for you, and it's rather an international event for you today, an international show. So let's start off. Well, yes, we have an action-packed show. And what's in it today, Lingo?
Well, as you remember, way back about 3 or 4 weeks ago, this is before Christmas, we picked our spun our globe of beer, and we picked a beer from South Africa, so we'll be sampling that, continuing with our international theme. We have a bonus segment that you did an interview with Tom Tisch of the Kona Brewing Company. We have our second part of our interview with Jeff Carrion, I believe it is.
Carrion,
I'm sorry, from the Midwest Outdoor TV. We have our music segment today, which is the Chicago, the Classical Sympathy.
Hang on. You've been at the beer, haven't you, already?
Well, you know, I was kind of waiting around and had a little too much.
All right, okay. Come on, get with the show here.
All right, a Classic Symphony Orchestra and a sports theme. You might stick around and find out what that's all about. And we're going to do a little chatting with you. I want to find out what exactly went on when you were in Hawaii.
I don't know about that. They say, what stays in Hawaii goes on in Hawaii, or something like that.
I thought that was somewhere else. Woo! But okay. Yeah. But we also have a special guest coming on a little bit later from England. We're going to have a long-distance pint and a little bit of a chat.
Yeah, that sounds absolutely fabulous. They got the beer music playing in the background there. Wait a minute. How does that come on?
I think we need something to drink.
I know. I think you're right. Yes, as you said, we had the wonderful South Africa chosen for our globe of beer last time round. And it was a bit difficult to go out and find some beers from South Africa. In fact, we had a hell of a time finding it. But we did come up with one. Indeed we did. We came up with Castle Lager. And this apparently is the premium South African lager. Looking at the bottle here, and it's on the shelf. You know, what we really should do is actually have one of our barmen, our guest barmen, come in and serve it to us. Johan?
Hello, guys. Want a couple of castles to cool you down?
Yes, we do. We need something to cool us down. We're all hot and bothered here after being off for a couple of... Well, you weren't off. Thank you very much, no. By the way, for looking after the show for us whilst we were gone. I did enjoy that. I actually downloaded that show whilst I was out there listening to it, and we had a good time. We had a good laugh.
That was a lot of fun doing it, and thanks to my family for helping me out.
Yeah, they're tremendous there, even though Rachel doesn't appear to really enjoy you. And if you haven't heard that show, go back and listen to it. It's a winner. So anyway, yes, we do have the Castle Lagers coming, and I think... Oh.
All right, two castles coming up. Want any zebra and peanuts with it as well?
No thanks. I think we're going to pass
peanuts,
on
peanuts? No, I'm allergic to zebras.
Is that like zebra's jerky or something? Yeah.
I don't know. So anyway, we do have this beer here. So why don't we go ahead, Lingo, and pour this out. All right. And let's see what we got. Comes in a pretty much a standard bottle here, but it's got a label on the front there that says Premium South African Lager, Castle Lager. So let's give it a whirl, pour it in.
It's a little quiet, you know. It doesn't have a widget in there to give
it. It doesn't have the widget, no. Well, I've given it a good pour, and yep, it's the standard lager color, wouldn't you say?
Yes.
Frothy. Actually, mine is very frothy.
Mine
I got a lot
too.
Of bubbles.
Yeah,
yes, look at that.
An inch ahead here.
We could have been a little bit forceful with it. I just don't know. But well, let's give this beer a taste and see what we got here. Hang on.
Well,
I am serving it ice cold because I have it on reliable information from Johan, our barman. Mm-hmm. That's how they serve it over there in the lovely part of the world called South Africa, and I guess that's all that really it strikes me.
It's just
I'm trying to think of something to say about this beer other than the fact that it's fizzy.
Being that about my Friday night are wrapped up with drinking at our neighbor's house, which is Miller Lite. Yeah, this is pretty similar to that. It's really nothing special. I mean, it doesn't come out and really grab you. There's no unique taste. I don't know if that's just me or what's your impression?
You know what? Funny you should mention that it was like Miller Lite because I did take a look at what Castle Brewery was online here, and I found out that it is, one of the oldest commercial breweries in South Africa. Company founded by Charles Glass.
Excuse me, it's very fizzy too. Oh, God. It's got so much carbonation.
Steady on, old boy. founded by Charles Glass in Johannesburg in 1894, later merged with other breweries to form the South African Breweries, which still later merged with... Miller.
Okay.
To form SAB Miller, South African Brewers Miller. So this is their main brand. Now, it was first brewed in 1895. I'm wondering if it tasted different in those days. Says it's won many awards, from gold medals to the world's best bottled lager.
Okay, where was this given out?
It says here, 2000 International Brewing Industry Awards. Okay, very good.
Okay. Small industry.
The lager has 5% ABV, so I mean, actually for a lager, that's not too bad.
Yeah, that's not bad.
Unique light hops taste, and I guess that's, that would be true. Somewhat dry, somewhat bitter, never sweet, and the beer that stood the test of time.
Okay.
Yes, rather. Okay, well, dump that information over there. Wait a minute. Hang on, Johan's got something to say here. What does he want to say?
If you guys don't like that beer, why don't you try some of our lovely estate wines instead? I recommend a Niederberg Pinotage or the KWV Cabernet.
That would be interesting to put a little twist on it, get some international wine.
Hang on a sec. Hey, Hey, would you drummers please keep quiet back there? Thank you. You know,
every time he comes on, he brings his whole drummers with him, you know?
He's got his own orchestra that just follows him around. It's like a mariachi band, you know? They just kind of keep wandering behind him. It's a little distracting.
What if they're Zulus?
I don't know.
We had a bit of trouble with the Zulus.
Yeah, well, the spears, I still got wounds on the side from those.
We had some trouble with the Boers as well, and that's where they get that accent from, I've been told. Yes, yes. I was actually chatting with Johan back there, behind there in the kitchen, and he was telling me a little bit about South Africa, and they're still a bit unhappy with the English.
No, I wonder why.
That's all right. They're now sucking tourist dollars down because that's the big spot to go for a nice vacation down to South Africa.
Really?
Yes, actually, my family went down there a couple of years ago, and they said that it was absolutely wonderful.
Mm.
So, you know, I think South Africa is a great place. In fact, in 3 years' time, the World Cup is going to be held there. So for all you football fans, sorry, for the Americans, soccer.
Yes.
Yeah, there's going to be a little bit of activity going on.
All you soccer hooligans head to South Africa.
Yeah, I don't want to get on the hooligan thing. Yeah. We'll talk about that a little bit later. But
right.
I think actually his idea of having some South African wines might be a good idea. And for a change of pace, maybe in a future edition. It is, but hang
see?
On a second. I don't
told
have a
you, it's very, I found it very, I mean,
it's
a lot of carbonation.
Yeah, right,
carbonation.
Right.
And we saw that when we poured it. The head got really thick, really right away. Big bubbles, which, you know, we know a lot of carbonation.
And what was I saying? Oh, yeah. In a future edition, maybe we'll do some sampling of some wines from South Africa because for a change of pace. Because I have tasted them and they are rather good. But now, one final point on this before we move on, and that is that ratebeer.com gave the Castle Lager
a
magnificent 8 percentile.
Are they getting paid by Miller?
Well, I don't know. 8 percentile? 8%? That's their rating eight. On it. No, not 80. 8.
Oh,
8. 0. 8.
I thought you were talking, they gave it an 8 out of 10. I was like,
no,
oh, my God.
No, 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 just an 8. And, yes, okay, oh, my goodness me. Frightening.
They finally hit one right.
Yes, they did.
Which we've had the experience with them saying something's fantastic, and we've looked at it and going, I don't want to pour this in a plant. It'll kill it.
Well, anyway, thanks very much to the fine folks at Castle Lager for allowing us to taste their beer. Even though I had to go searching high and low for it, we'll pass. But now, something a lot better, and I'm going to give you this right now. The Kona Brewing Company, fabulous people.
Really?
Absolutely. On the Big Island of Hawaii, and in fact they have brew pubs in other areas as well. They have them in Oahu, and I think they have one on Kauai, but I'm not entirely certain. Great beer. We were out there with the lovely Kimberly. We found the place down in Kona. It's a super little spot. You can sit there and enjoy a nice pint. And whilst I was there tasting their IPA and their porters and everything, and in fact I got a couple of photographs that we'll stick up on the website a bit later on, I found that Mr. Tom Tash was a wonderful fellow, one of the brewmasters there, and he very kindly offered to give me an interview, and so I'm going to play that for you right now. I'm standing here in the Kona Brewing Company in Kona, Hawaii, on the wonderful Big Island of Hawaii. And I'm talking with Tom, who's one of the brewmasters here. How you doing, Tom?
I'm doing good.
Good.
Doing good.
I've tried the Pipeline Porter, and it has 100% Kona coffee in it, right?
That's right.
And it's really, really good. Yours is fabulous for a coffee beer. It's great. I really enjoyed it.
Well, thanks.
I really, really enjoyed it. What's your most popular beer here?
The IPA is the most popular. But getting back to the Pipeline real quick, it's a seasonal that we just brought out. And what it is kind of like a brown porter style, which is a little bit mellower in alcohol and not quite so roasty. And what we did was to brew that porter up, we would take it into about 2 or 3 weeks fermentation. And then when we put it in the conditioning tank, then we would add some fresh Kona coffee to it for about a week and a half.
Because there's a lot of beers that give that chocolatey or coffee flavor that add from the malt, right? Because
right.
It's the actual roasted malt. But you're adding real coffee,
like
right?
That's right. Porters and stouts are like that. And yeah. So we thought it'd be a natural blend. We also do a... Now, the pipeline is a seasonal. It's our fall-winter seasonal, so October to March. And
that's when the temperature gets down to, what, 75 degrees here?
Well, I'll tell you, it's been cold here lately. A couple of nights last week,
It
got all the way down to the upper 60s down here in Kailua. It was a two-blanket night. I'm not kidding you. It was nuts. So thank goodness it's warm enough
that's
again. Because
right.
We can't, we're thin-blooded here. We do another coffee beer during the coffee harvest roasting season,
okay.
Which is like October, November. And it's an Imperial Stout, which is a really nice alcoholic stout. And then we'll take some of the Kona coffee and infuse that into the conditioning tank after
okay.
It's all fermented out. And we'll take about two or three barrels of that batch, and we put them into bourbon barrels as well.
Oh, you do? Okay.
Yeah, and then let that age in the bourbon barrels from anywhere from 2 to 6 months, and then keg that off special.
And that is available just locally? Or
just locally.
Just locally,
just
yeah.
locally.
So if you need that, folks, come out to Kona,
Hawaii.
You
got to come
Hawaii.
Out to Kona for that one. And that goes pretty fast. We do one 25-barrel batch of that,
okay.
And that's usually only around for about 3 months, and then it's gone.
And you were saying your IPA is one of the most
popular. It's the most popular here in the pub.
I'm tasting that over there, and that's very nice because, to me, it has that rich hoppy flavor that I like. I like the IPAs, but it's also light as well.
Right.
A question to ask you, what about serving it at the temperature? Because obviously we're in a hot climate here,
right.
And having a nice cold beer is something that's quite... acceptable, but I know that some beers you want to serve a little warmer temperature.
Well, there's always sort of a disconnect, I think, between the brewer's side of things. The brewers kind of realize what certain beers should be served at what certain temperatures. Then you have sort of the mass public that wants every beer cold.
Right.
If I could do it the way I wanted to, we would serve certain beers at more cellar temperatures, which brings out a lot more aromatic and
right.
a lot more flavors. It's like chilling a red wine.
Yeah.
People are not going to drink it because
right.
you're killing the flavor. You're killing the aroma. Same thing happens with beer. Certain beers really should be served at cellar temperature. Any
right.
porters, any stouts, IPAs. We just did an ESB last week, which will be on tap in about 3 weeks for
okay.
the Kona Brewers Festival.
Okay.
Which is
when's that?
March 10th.
March 10th. Okay.
Yeah.
Ooh, I got to come back at that time.
Oh, you should. it's a great event.
Okay.
It's down here on the at the King Kamehameha Hotel.
Okay.
On the beach, and there's about 30 breweries that come over. All the Hawaiian breweries are here, plus about 30 others from the mainland.
Uh-huh.
And each of them bring two beers. So
right.
there's going to be 60 beers on tap for tasting the sampling.
Are they mostly from California? Or?
Mostly it's West Coast.
Okay.
It's California, Oregon, Washington. But we'll get some from Idaho, Nevada, Arizona, Colorado.
Anything in the Midwest?
Actually, the last year, the longest traveled brewer was from New Jersey, Flying
oh, wow.
Fish.
Oh, yeah, Flying Fish.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
They brought their double and something else that I can't recall right now.
Have you ever tried brewing any of the real ales in the casks and having it non-carbonated?
Well, actually, one of the things that we're doing here at Kona is we have a firkin program here that what we do is we'll draw off from one of our tanks a beer that's not completed yet, put it in a firkin, and then put some fresh fermenting beer in it and then some different hops, some dry hops or a different additive. Sometimes just about 6 months ago, I did a vanilla porter where we took some fresh Hawaiian vanilla,
ooh.
Chopped it up and put it in the firkin with a porter and did a nice vanilla porter with it. Most often we'll take one of our regular beers and then dry hop it, naturally carbonate it, and then tap the cask out here in the bar. It usually is gone in about 2 hours.
What's your opinion about adding kind of a fruit flavor to your beer? I see you have a Lilikoi ale, right?
Lilikoi is passion fruit.
Passion fruit?
Yeah,
right,
okay. Which is kind of a tart citric fruit in the tropics. It grows here.
You don't add syrup, though. Add the real fruit.
No, and that's part of the company direction, is that we don't add anything that's artificial or not, not in its pure form. Mm-hmm. If we're going to do anything like a fruit beer or any kind of a beer that's flavored with anything other than hops and malt, it's going to be a natural product.
Okay.
We won't add anything artificial just because it's our principle.
Right.
When we add the Lilikoi, we add that at the whirlpool. So after we boil for an hour and transfer it over to the whirlpool for clarification, then we'll add the Lilikoi there. And what it is Lilikoi concentrate. Mm-hmm. In other words, they've just taken fresh Lilikoi and evaporated some of the water out, just so that we can manage it.
Right.
And if we're going to do any other kind of a fruit beer, it would be that same principle, where we would add pure fruit to a beer. We just don't really believe in adding artificial flavors or anything like that. It keeps it real.
What's the most exotic beer you've made?
That's an interesting question. Certainly the Lilikoi is an exotic beer, because I don't think anybody else is doing a Lilikoi or passion fruit wheat.
Right.
Yeah. We have done a coconut porter before, which is real nice.
That sounds like that would be a real good combination.
Kind
of almost a, I guess, like adding a pina colada type.
Almost.
Really, porter takes a lot of good flavors.
Yeah, you're going to have those sort of chocolatey, roasty, almost coffee-like aromas and flavors from a porter. And what we'll do is we'll take some flaked coconut, the big, wide flaked coconut that is just pure coconut, and then toast that in the oven for maybe 15 minutes at 350 to give it a nice toasty aroma and flavor.
Right.
And then we'll put that in the conditioning tank. And you'd be amazed how much flavor and aroma the beer picks up just from about a week on the coconut.
Yeah.
And some people have compared it to like a Mounds bar, the candy bar that's like dark chocolate and coconut, but without the sweetness.
For those guys in the UK, that's a Bounty bar.
A Bounty bar?
Yeah.
It's a great combination of flavors.
Yeah.
Coconut and dark or bittersweet chocolate.
That's good. How many barrels of beer do you create here over like a period of time, a week or a month?
We measure it by the year here.
Okay.
And we do just under 10,000 barrels a year out of this brewery here. We contract brew beer for mainland distribution over at Widmer Brothers in Portland. And our combined output for the year is about 45,000 barrels, which ranks us 32nd largest craft brewery in America.
Pretty good.
Yeah, out of about 1,350 breweries, craft breweries in America, we're 32nd in terms of barrelage and sales of finished product.
And do you go to the Great American Beer Festival?
We do.
Do you take a beer from here or one that's been brewed on the mainland?
No, we only take it from here.
Okay.
And we usually take 6 to 8 beers with us. Just last year, we won a gold medal for a Black Sam Porter.
Ooh.
The year prior to that, we won a silver medal for the same beer. Black Sam Porter, which is a robust porter. Comes in about 6.8% by volume.
That's good.
It's a fantastic porter.
Yeah. I'll try that after the IPA.
You got to do that. According to the judges at the Great American Beer Festival, last year, or not 2006, but 2005, it was voted the best robust porter in America. So I'm saying something.
How did you get into this job? Did you were you a brewmaster on the mainland? You came out here?
I was. I was brewing in a mountain town in Idaho called McCall Brewing Company.
Okay.
And this was a real concerted effort by myself and my wife. We had been vacationing in the Hawaiian Islands for about 8 years. Yeah. And I think after the second trip, we just said, well, there's got to be a way. There's got to be a way to live and work here because we have to work, right? We're not independently wealthy, so we can't retire here. But so I made a concerted effort to land this job. I started looking at brewing companies in the Hawaiian Islands and wanted a company that I could grow with and that really had something going on. And the choices were not real broad, but Kona stood out, you know, above head and shoulders above everybody else.
There's only about two or three, isn't there?
There's two on this island.
The other one is
Mehana in Hilo, and they're strictly a micro. They don't have a pub or anything. Over on the island of Maui, there's only one now, Maui Brewing Company, and they're producing some great beers, but they're fairly small.
Mm-hmm.
Then over on Oahu, they have a small handful, maybe four brew pubs. I think Gordon Biersch has a restaurant over there. We actually have a pub over there, but not a brewery. So we ship all of our beer over to Oahu. And then in Kauai, there is, of course, Waimea.
Right.
And then Keoki Brewing down in Lihue.
Okay.
And they're strictly a micro also. They don't have a pub. Like I said, when I started looking at getting a brewing job on, you know, in the Hawaiian Islands, in the state of Hawaii, Kona was the clear choice, and basically once I set my sights on landing this job, it took me about a year. And
how long have you been here?
I've been here almost 2 years now.
2 years.
Yeah. Loving every minute. So everybody in Kona knows everybody, pretty much. If you're living and working here, it has a real nice community feel to it, which all comes back to the pub. This is a meeting place. This
that's
is
right.
where people can get together after their day and talk about what's going on in their life. And, you know, it's become a really, really successful business because of what we offer. We offer a friendly pub atmosphere where people can get together, have a few beers, have some great food, and just hang out and talk. You know, it's just no television scenes.
Right. I did notice that, and that's great. And that's, you know, you've got the open air, you've got all the tropical feel, and you've got some good fresh beer, and what more could you want?
There you go.
That's great. Tom, I really appreciate you taking the time to give us a call. And
no worries.
If you're ever in Chicago, stop by the Brit and Yankee.
Well, you know, I'd love to do that. I may be going back.
Did he do a promo?
Really?
I've still got some family in Elgin.
Okay.
So I'll definitely look you.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, Tom.
Thank you very much.
Cheers. Thanks.
Cheers.
And the wonderful Tom Tash, my thanks to you. You were absolutely superb. The guy was standing there beside at the bar, drinking with his pal in his lunch hour, and he consented for me to come up with my little handheld and do an interview with him. So thank you, Tom. You're a man.
That was awesome. That was some great information.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the Kona beers. In fact, I haven't tasted a porter that I liked as much since I tasted the Imperial Brown Goose, the Imperial Brown from the Goose Island Brewing Company.
Really?
Now, that was a good one. You know, slightly different styles, but you know how I like the heavier beers.
Yeah, and you mentioned in there you were going to try a certain one after you did. You tried the IPA. So you were drinking the IPA at the time.
I was, and that was very nice. It was hoppy but light. wasn't really strong. It was just enough to say, boy, this is a tasty beer and a good drinking beer. I really enjoyed it. I think they've got themselves together over there. I did actually, just to mention, I did actually go to other brewing companies over there.
Mm-hmm.
On the island of Kauai, they have the Waimea Brewing Company. And unfortunately, when I went there, their brewmaster wasn't in. I missed him.
Oh, boy.
Missed it by that much, 99. Yeah, but I did try some of their brews. They didn't have the IPA on at the time. They're a little bit smaller. They are the world's westernmost brew pub in the United States. And they're very small. It's like you walk into this little bar, and it's pretty good. We'll put some pictures up on the website. But I did try the Pakala Porter, which is very good. And I did try also the Cane Fire Red, which I'm not a red style fan, but this was pretty good. So there are, if you're out in the island of Hawaii, there are still very, very good beers that you can get. And people like Tom Tash have been pursuing the brewing career with great success.
Yeah, it sounded like you had a great time, and he sounded very knowledgeable in everything about everything going on. And it's good to hear that they won some awards. And I was asking you before if you can get some of these around here, because it'd be interesting to try some of these
In
a future show.
The Kona Brewing Company, that's available over here without too much problem. So you should be able to find that in most good beer stores.
Excellent. If not, tell them to order it for you.
That's right. Tell them to order it for you, yeah. Now, you know what we have to do now, don't you? Before we leave the wonderful world of beer, you know what we have to do now?
Yeah, I think I have a little idea.
We have to... hello, he's going on to the remote
microphone.
I'm
getting off my chair and going on the different one. Oh, this one's really loud.
Yes, it's not that loud. It's just you're holding it up your nose.
What?
Sorry, it's down here.
There we
go.
It's lovely now. Thank you.
I gotta switch hands.
We have to spin the Globe of Beer.
Okay.
Globe of Beer!
And I'm going to spin it now.
All right, he's spinning the globe a bit.
Spinning, and I hit water. Sorry.
Oh, you hit water.
I hit water again. Actually, it came very close to Hawaii, but not even close. I mean, I was, 1,000 miles away, but it looks really close.
You know what? I've got a story about hitting water. I'll tell you.
Okay, let me spin this one more time, really good.
Do I have to do the? Hang on a minute. Okay.
Can I open my eyes now?
You can open your eyes. What
do we got? Oh, okay. We're actually in the United States. I would
think
somewhere northwest.
Somewhere northwest.
Yes.
Well, can't you be a little bit more specific?
Say probably South Dakota or Iowa or Idaho.
Idaho or the Dakotas. Yes. Right. Okay. Move back to the other mic, Mike.
Coming back. Hello.
Oh, there we go. He's up on there. Good. Okay, so for our Globe of Beer and our search for beer for our next show, we're going to have to find something from Idaho or the Dakotas. Or can we spot Montana?
You
sound like a Brit. Bloody hell, mate. All right, it's Montana,
oh, God,
isn't it?
God, your British skirt is
how
like
about Montana up there, you know?
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, and one of those is Big Sky Country, which is the one that has a license plate that says Big Sky.
I think it might be Montana.
Is it Montana? Yeah, okay. Right, so we're going to find something up there, and we'll bring you that on the next show. Matilda.
And we're on our way to Denver.
It's been closed down. I think they're doing some sort of cleaning in the kitchen.
Oh, I'm going to lose weight. Oh, I want to change jobs. I want to do that.
We should have 6 foot of snow on the ground by now, and it should be minus 60.
Well, at least we're not at the Briton Yankee.
Yeah, we're up against the wall at the end of the year here. And plus,
turkey and some ham, and of course, maybe a couple beers.
Goose Island beer on tap. Very, very fond of Goose Island beer. And we will go up to the top of the charts. Yes, that was the wonderful BMY Sweeper. And I wanted to bring up, whilst we were gone, there were a number of events that went on. One of them being the Super Bowl. I don't know why you're cheering. You're a bloody Packers fan. You disgusting person.
Well,
you
know what? Like I told everybody at work, you know what? I really don't care who wins. I'd like to see the Bears. But as long as my picks come in on the football pool, that's, you know, it all comes down to money anyways.
And did your picks come in?
Yes. Me and my brother-in-law, Mark, won a little bit of money, I'd rather not say, because the IRS might be listening. But, yes, we won just enough to cover.
Gambling is illegal in this country.
Yes, well, it was enough to cover our bets.
Oh, okay. Well, very good. Very good. All the beers on you next week, then.
Yeah, you betcha. Oops.
Well, actually, I and my good buddy Dave, we were watching. We were both out in Hawaii at the same time. And we watched the Super Bowl from the hotel at the Hilton Waikoloa Resort. And it was a wonderful event. They had up a big screen. They had the surround sound. They had all-you-eat wings.
Wow.
There was a whole bunch of people there from Chicago. In fact, one lady was wearing an Urlacher jersey, and it was pink because it was a lady. I don't know if that jinxed us because, you know, we were sitting there and we were cheering away, and I had my good old number 88 Desmond Clark shirt on, you know, good old number 88. Unfortunately, they didn't do anything with him until the end of the game. But we were sitting there watching it, having a good old time, and then they started it up, and there we go. We get the good Vasher run back. Seven points. Right, we knew we were in. Woo-hoo! Yeah! The Bears! The Bears!
The Bears.
And then, all of a sudden, unfortunately...
then it happened.
Yeah. Not good at all. So
please wait till next year.
Yeah. You know what, though? I think the Bears did a wonderful thing. I think they took us to the Super Bowl. I'm not complaining about it. You know, Grossman, he's a rookie. What can you say?
You know what? As you know, I'm not a huge Bear fan. I do support
the
Bears.
Well, you are huge.
I am huge, as you can tell from my new double XL Brit and Yankee sweatshirt.
Oh, we'll talk about that later.
Yeah, a little bit later.
Yes.
But you know what? I heard a lot of these sports shows talking about how Grossman did this and Grossman did that. You know what? It was a team effort. Everybody lost. They did not play like they should have played. It should not be put down to one person.
You're absolutely right. Absolutely correct. And thank you, Bears, for that wonderful season.
It was a fantastic season. We all celebrated all year long. It was fantastic. Even a Packers fan.
Well, as one last farewell, and then we'll put the football season to bed for 2006-2007. I came across a piece of music. What was that?
Until minicamp.
Oh, yeah, until minicamp, right. Yeah. I came across this piece of music, which I thought was absolutely wonderful, because it is our Chicago Link music today. This is the Chicago Symphony Orchestra performing Bear Down Chicago Bears with the lovely Sir George Salty conducting. So you know what, Lingo? Give this a quick listen. There you go. How about that?
Yeah, it was wonderful.
A symphony orchestra playing the Chicago Bears theme. In fact, that was actually recorded back in 1986, just after the Bears had their fabulous Super Bowl victory.
Really?
So I thought we were going to be doing it every 22 years because they won it in 63, 85, 2007. Was that going to be our year? No, I'm afraid not. So all congratulations to the Indianapolis Colts, Peyton Manning. Good for them. But unfortunately, the Bears
didn't
win.
Wait till next year.
Wait till next year. That's it, absolutely. So, anyway, okay. Now, listen, I've been promising this for quite some time.
Alrighty.
This is the part two, the second part of our interview with Jeff Carrion, the producer-director of Midwest Outdoors TV. And this gives us a little bit of an insight and a little bit of fun and games as to how you produce a syndicated television program. Ooh. So take a listen to this.
This week on Midwest Outdoors, the best freshwater fishing on earth, we tell you where to begin. The action is on the ice on Minnesota's Lake of the Woods. And Roger Cormier details tactics for Ontario walleye. It all starts right here, right now. You are turned on to Midwest Outdoors Magazine. Since 1967, helping people enjoy the outdoors.
Hi, I'm Gene Lowen, and welcome to this week's Midwest Outdoors Magazine. We've got a great show for you. Be sure to have a paper and pencil ready so you can jot down some great ideas on how to enjoy your time outdoors. Be sure to stay with us because this show is a keeper.
Jeff Carrion is a producer and director for Midwest Outdoors magazine and TV show. His job is to create a half-hour syndicated show for the millions of people in the Midwest and beyond who spend their leisure time casting their favorite lure in the hope of catching that trophy fish, or quietly stalking the woods in search of that elusive 10-point buck. In the first part of our interview, we talked with Jeff about some of the professional equipment and techniques he used in putting the program together. I asked him if he thought all the products available to the amateur home videographer today permitted production of content to rival the professional studios.
Well, now we're talking about art in a sense where, you know, anybody can take a can of paint and dump it on canvas and call it art, but, you know, it takes a true artist to make a work of art. Anybody who buys a Mac these days, it comes with, you know, iMovie and programs like that, and you can take your home camera. You can buy a camera for a couple $100 and then cut it on your home movie of your kids running around in the backyard, and you can have a nice little movie, and you couldn't do that before. So it's really great in that sense. Now, you know, if we're talking from a business sense, as us trying to market a product to advertisers and the clients, right, and trying to compete with other people, it's actually bad. Because, in my opinion, it's a bad thing to happen. Because the program we use, which is called Final Cut Pro, very popular program these days. It's very inexpensive. It's only, right now, I think it's $1,200 for the whole package. And you get an editor, you get motion effects and sound recording stuff, and you get a whole suite for that. And that's great for us because we can do a lot of really cool things, you know, on a small budget. But it's bad because any Joe Schmo out there can also afford to buy it and put together a show that we have to compete with.
I don't know about anybody. $1,200 is quite expensive for most home people.
There's a big difference between having to spend. Nowadays, you can get a full setup for $5,000 with a computer and software. Right. And the same setup all those years ago would cost you $50,000.
Having seen the excellent program that Jeff and his crew put together, I don't think he has to worry. One advantage for the professional is the presence they command when a film crew shows up to do an interview or film the action. They will always have more access to the subject matter. After all, who wouldn't want to be on television?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we come in, we command a presence when we're out there. And it, you know, that was another thing we had to deal with when we're talking about cameras is Like the editing machines have shrunk, so have the cameras. And, you know, in days past, if you ever seen a newsman on the street recording something and they got that big shoulder mount camera, you know, it's a beta cam. Looks very professional, very intimidating. But for our case, it's not practical to use something like that. Because we have them, we have used them, but trying stuffing that on a carry-on in a float plane in the middle of Canada, and you got another 60 pounds of batteries and tapes that you got to lug with by yourself, well, that's just not very practical. So we used a lot of smaller cameras. We use what's called a Canon XL2, which is a much smaller camera. It'll fit in a carry-on on an airplane, smaller batteries, small tapes.
Oh, let's see him come. Now that is a Heartland Northern we got coming up here. We've been fighting him for quite a while now. Jeff's got him on just 6-pound test. Now that's a nice fish. Yeah, that was a beautiful fish.
Glad I got the net. Oh, yeah. See, that's a bigger fish there. And that's a dandy there. Classic Canadian walleye. And fish is on. Dandy walleye here. Look at that. Oh, man.
This is a nice fish, guys.
That's a nice fish right there.
Nice little sauger to go in the box.
That one will make dinner.
Jeff's career in television production has not always been done from the comfort of a studio. Before moving behind the scenes, Jeff was a cameraman for the Midwest Outdoors program, and this took him to some very interesting and sometimes surprisingly exotic locales.
I've been from the Tropic of Capricorn all the way to the Arctic Circle.
And it's not always easy traveling to these places. You have to take some exotic forms of transportation to get to some of the way out places.
Oh yeah, it's planes, trains, and automobiles to get up to some. Most of these places in Canada are fly-in only, where you would, you know, take commercial jets up to Minneapolis or to International Falls, which is on the Canadian border, and then you maybe drive to another float plane base, and then you get in float planes or puddle jumpers, as they call them, you know, fly up to some remote airstrip or a lake somewhere way up north. And I've been strapped, you know, to a helicopter with no door, hanging out with my camera 1,000 feet above the ice, taking pictures of ice fishing. And it's kind of a tournament where they have...
Where was this? Up in Minnesota?
Yeah, it's around Brainerd area, Minnesota. And they have about, I think there's about 2,000 people on the ice and about 2,000 holes drilled in the ice in a grid about 5 feet apart. It's like a huge pegboard on the ice. Everyone's fishing, and they had a helicopter covering it for the news and for all that kind of thing. And I was down there shooting it for our show, and they said, "Hey, we got a helicopter. Get in." So I just jumped in, and they had the doors off and put my seatbelt on and flew around taking shots, and it was a great time.
And finally, as promised, I wanted to hear from Jeff if he had any great stories from his experiences at Midwest Outdoors. He did, and he told me the legend of the wave of the dead chicken.
Well, one of my favorite stories that we tell religiously every time we go to a resort that we shoot at in Mexico, it's a place...
Now, wait a minute. Mexico's not in the Midwest. How come you're going down there?
You know, we hear that a lot. And, you know, the simple answer is, you know, we go where the money is. And if, you know, we've had a client in a hotel in Mexico that's been advertising with us for years. And what better place to go to when it's January in Chicago than Cabo San Lucas and enjoy a time down there and go fishing? Anyway, we go to a place, a hotel down there that's north of Cabo San Lucas. We go there all the time. I've been there. You know, I've been there a dozen times myself, and we tell a story around there that we, as if it were an urban legend, a folklore, if you will, that we call La Ola de Pollo Muerto, which is a very Spanglish kind of way of saying it loosely means the wave of the dead chicken. So what does that mean? Well, we were there, it was April. And myself and my producer and another friend of his, we're doing the show, and we're on these big charter boats, you know, 15, 20-foot boats, large space in the back. You know, we're marlin fishing. You know, this is big water. And we're out on the Sea of Cortez. And the wind was just ripping for days. And the seas were building. And waves were just huge. You know, usually it's beautiful down there. You're in the tropics. It's slack calm. It's 90 degrees year-round. You know, it never rains, that kind of thing. But it was early in the spring, and the wind was just ripping. And we're all hanging on. Not much fishing was happening. We're not shooting, of course, because it's hard to sell vacations when there's 10-foot waves splashing over the back of the boat. So we're hanging on for dear life, and we're just kind of rocking with the waves, and we didn't want to eat lunch that day because we're all getting a little queasy. And the guy's with decides to go down in the hold of the boat to eat his lunch, and because there's like a little bedroom and a galley and a head down there. And so he sits down on a bench and pulls a cooler up to his knees to make as a table, and he unwraps his little packet of lunch. It's they give you fried chicken for lunch wrapped in tinfoil. So he opens it up and he starts eating, and we can see him from where we're sitting up outside. And you know, the captain must have not have been paying attention or something, and you know, he speared a wave. The La Olla, the Puerto Muerto rode in, and this wave was 20 feet high if it was a foot. I mean, it was, you know, it's like 4 or 5 meters, as you would say. And he spears the trough of this wave with the front of the boat. The entire wave comes crashing over the bow, and there is a hatch in the top of the bow that leads into this area where this guy was sitting. That hatch explodes open, and 1,000 gallons of seawater dumps on his head. And we get splashed, we're soaking wet, we get knocked out of our chairs, we kind of come to and shake off, and you okay, yeah, okay, you okay? And we look down to see our buddy down there, and he's sitting down there holding his chicken in his tinfoil, and then now it's floating in seawater, and he's as wet as can be, just looking at us like, what the heck just happened?
According to statistics from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, in 2000, across the U.S., anglers bought 29.6 million fishing licenses, paying $490.8 million for the privilege. Additionally, hunters purchased 50 million licenses, accounting for a further $613.9 million. The revenues raised through these sales support state fish and wildlife agencies, their conservation projects, and their hunting and fishing safety and education programs. Across the Great Lakes region, Midwest Outdoors, although a private organization, supports these efforts by promoting the purchase of licenses, catch and release, and bringing education and knowledge to those who take advantage of the great outdoors. My thanks to Jeff for providing us an insight into the Midwest Outdoors TV show. And if you'd like more information on both the show and the magazine, please visit www.midwestoutdoors.com. This has been Phil Clark reporting for the Britain Yankee, signing off as the Midwest Outdoors show does each week.
This is Ted Takasaki with Midwest Outdoors Tip of the Week.
This is Perry Good for Midwest Outdoors Tip of the Week.
This is Walt Matten with your Midwest Outdoors Tip of the Week.
Well, that's our show for this week. Be sure to join us next week for another edition of Midwest Outdoors Magazine. Tell your friends about our show, too. We'd like them to join us. Till then, I'm Gene Lawlin, and thanks for watching.
Thank you very much, Jeff. I really appreciate it. You are a fabulous guy for letting us come in and talk to you there. It was a lot of fun, and I hope you enjoyed listening to that.
Yeah, the show is really good, too. If you haven't caught it, you got to go and check out the show, because they do hit on a lot of different things. And yeah, whether you fish, hunt, or whatever, they really do do a great job of catching the real, you know, for the hunter or the fisherman, they really give a lot of information in their show. It's really a good show.
Yeah, it is. It's a fabulous show. Now, Jeff was mentioning, actually, a helicopter ride that he took over the ice. holes, excuse me, pardon me, over the ice holes of Minnesota. And that brings me to a tale of my ride in a helicopter.
Really?
Yes, out in the wonderful Hawaiian Islands.
Book 'em, Dano.
I took a helicopter ride there, Lingo.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, fascinating.
It was absolutely fabulous. I took a doors-off helicopter ride. Now, you know it wasn't Hawaii 50, but you remember Magnum PI?
Sure, yeah. With
Magnum PI, those little bell helicopters and the open doors and everything.
Yeah.
Well, it was pretty similar to that. And you could have doors on or doors off. Well, this was doors off. And they call it the Feel the Heat ride.
Really?
And I enjoyed it.
Did you feel the heat?
I did feel the heat, actually. Oh, really? Yeah, I was having hot flashes.
Oh, no, interesting. No, actually, do you want to talk about that?
Yes. They put you in there's four of you go in this helicopter, and they put you in. We were in the back seats. The lovely Kimberly and I were in the back seats, and then there's two in the front. Our wonderful pilot was Emily.
Mm-hmm.
And I went, whoa, a lady pilot. But then I thought, well, what the heck? She can fly the plane as much as anybody.
Right.
I guess it's just stereotyping there. But, oh, she was great. She gave us all the commentary. But what this plane does is, this helicopter does, it takes off and, does the old over the waterfalls, around the lava flows. But then it comes in and circles the live active calderas of Mount Kilauea, the active volcano on Hawaii.
The hot magma.
Oh, hot magma, baby. I got to tell you.
Oh, the magma.
Magma. Yeah. It was absolutely amazing.
Really?
And now I heard afterwards they say that, these helicopters have to keep a certain level because the fumes coming up could potentially interfere with the engine. But, okay, we were all good. They must be all licensed. Anyway, we didn't care. It's on my list of 100 things to do, take
there
a ride in a helicopter with the doors off. So as you come into this caldera, she kind of turns it. And you know how you're in one of those roller coasters where you kind of know as you're turning and then the gravity pulls you? Well, that's kind of like what it is. You turn around and she does the left turn and then a right turn so everybody can get to see it.
Yeah.
But as you turn around, you look down into this hole in which there is bubbling lava. And it's going bloop, bloop. Right over the top, right around it.
Oh,
and
my God.
Oh, my God. You look down into it and you see that red, and that's pretty much at this point in time all you can see of the live active volcano, because it's kind of calmed down a little bit, although it has been active for the last 23-24 years, and it's flowing down lava tubes 3 or 4 miles out to the sea, and we actually flew over that bit as well.
That's
and when
cool.
it hits the sea, it's kind of steam coming up and hissing and spluttering, and that's what is enlarging the island of Hawaii. But as you fly over this, you see this, it's just like going bloop on the, and that was like the best experience of my life.
Is that where you where the name comes from, Feel the Heat? Could you feel the heat that the doors were off?
Well,
or were you high enough?
I don't know if it was because we were down lower and so we were into the warm area, but I know she flies up about 1,500 foot to go out to there, and it's pretty chilly up there. And the prop is, as you say, the prop wash is coming down.
Right.
But as you get lower, it feels a lot warmer, and you think it's going to be, feeling the heat from that. I don't know if it is or not, but I got to tell you, it's a magnificent experience. So if ever you're out there...
Did you take some pictures so we can put them on
the website? I did. I took a couple of pickies. Yeah, we'll stick them up on the website.
Oh,
yes.
Wonderful.
They were quite good. So that's my little experience with a helicopter.
That's great, though. That's
and
fantastic.
And it was a lot of fun.
Mike Lingerfelter. Bill Clark. Yes, they are the boys of the Brit and the Yankee. Two of the most entertaining podcasters in the universe. Listen as they quaff their beer and destroy the art of conversation. One British and one American. and at any moment likely to start World War III!
Yes, Lingo. Lingo, we have someone with us on the telephone.
Oh, I'm so excited!
Well, actually, he's not on the telephone, but he's on Google. Are you there, Mr. Vobes?
Yes, I'm here, waiting to speak to the stars of the Brit and Yankee.
Wait, we'll go find some.
Yeah, right. How are you?
Yes, I'm very well, thank you very much. A bit out of breath. I've been running around the South Downs here.
Really?
England, yes.
Have you been up on the Downs or Downs on the up?
And over the Downs and round the corners.
Oh.
Love it.
Well, I tell you what, we are absolutely very happy that you could join us today for our little post-show chat, if you will. Well, it's not really post-show. We haven't finished yet, but we like to have a little chat about matters of the day. Mm-hmm. And we thought, who better to have a chat about matters of the day than Richard Vobes?
Absolutely, because I am outspoken. Whereas you are outsized. But no.
Hey, whoa.
Whoa.
Whoa. Hey, below the belt.
Well, you know, that's okay, because I just came back from the Hawaiian Islands, where you can get extra large, double extra large, and triple extra large quite easily. Thank you very much.
Oh, my goodness.
It was wonderful. So, hey, listen, Richard. Have you ever used a snowblower?
I've never used a snow. We don't get any snow over here.
Well, I came back from 80 degree weather and had to clear 6 inches of snow off my driveway. And I just wanted to find out what the weather was doing over there, because it's bloody cold over here.
Well, I have to say, it is overcast over here. Looking out of the beach out here in Worthing by the sea and having trailed around on the ups and downs, it's been fairly mild, about, I don't know, about 10 degrees centigrade, but overcast and sort of grey.
Sounds okay to me. Sounds like Seattle.
Yes, it does.
Sounds lovely.
Well, do you believe that it's global warming or global freezing? I mean, it seems
No, that's all absolute rubbish, because I was listening to a program and they said, the other day there was some chap saying, there's some anomaly going on somewhere in the world. And then they said, I blame it on that global warming. And I thought, that's just an excuse now for anything weird that goes on is global warming, apparently.
Yes, I absolutely agree with you 100%. I'm sure that we've had this in the past. You know, through history, we've had global freezing, we've had global warming and global freezing. It's just, we're here at a blip in time.
Yeah, it's all bunk. It's like, you go outside now, and especially around the Chicago area in the Midwest, even out in New York area, we're talking in the last 2 or 3 weeks, we have not been above 32 degrees Fahrenheit for literally 2 or 3 weeks. So global warming, I'm going outside with aerosol cans. I'm trying to pop that hole open to warm it up, and it ain't working.
Well, I just think that it's something that everybody is finding very handy to either pin things on, or they're using it as a way of making money, because you can have all sorts of schemes and sort of social planning and various things around this so-called inverted global warming now.
Yeah, I agree with you. I'm not saying that there isn't something to that point, that we are changing perhaps with our emissions somewhat.
I'm sure that there's a contribution going on to the world, and I don't think it's a bad thing that people conserve energy and don't travel so much and all the rest of it, but it just seems to be a way for a lot of corporations now have got on the idea, hang on a minute, we can make shed loads of cash if we put it onto the global warming tag.
Everybody's
got a cause here and there, and you know, anything to try to persuade you to send in your hard-earned money for their cause, when you really don't know if it's actually going for that, or, you know, 1% goes for it and the 99% goes in their pocket.
Yeah. There we go. Topic number one, we're in agreement. Global warming doesn't exist. By the way, I forgot, do you want a beer?
Oh, have you got one?
Well, we're drinking Castle Lager from South Africa, and I wouldn't really describe it as beer. I mean, I call it as wet and tasty or refreshing, but...
Carbonated.
Well, I'll give that a miss then, thanks very much. I've got a nice bottle here of Copper Dragon.
Copper Dragon, where's that from?
This is from Yorkshire. It's very nice. It's a sort of hoppy-flavoured thing. It's rather delicious. In fact, there's a couple of bottles to get through today.
Oh, sounds like a lovely thing, lad, from up in Yorkshire.
But I am actually saving it for just a little bit later on, I have to say, because pizzas are in the oven and so are chips, so we're going to have that with that.
And chips. Now, there's a good healthy food. All right, Richard.
Yes.
Topic number two.
Yes, fire away.
Cockfighting.
Yes, I'll get there. I'll go on guard.
Wait, is this for the naked Englishman? Or no, I'm sorry.
Okay, you've heard of cockfighting, right? Well, I read in the news that there was also something going on in the UK, toddler fighting. Have you heard of this?
Yeah, they were getting very... a lot of people were sending in this stuff and saying, you know, this would be a good rant for the show. And actually, I didn't actually catch the news item when it first came out, so now time has sort of ticked on, of course. But I think it's despicable and outrageous. And apparently the women who, when they were locked up in prison overnight in the police cell, started to weep and sort of, you know, moan and say, well, we didn't think it was going to do any harm. You just think, well, what planet are they on that didn't think it was going to do any harm? Remove their heads, thank you very much.
I agree. And just to bring the US folks up to speed, this was apparently two families who got together, and they had 2 or 3 year old toddlers, and they basically put the toddlers together and encouraged them to slap and punch one another a la cockfighting. And I guess their excuse was something like, well, we didn't want to raise any wusses or any pansies. We wanted to raise someone who knew how to look after themselves. But you can't do that sort of thing with 2 and 3 year olds. That's ridiculous.
You'll turn them into soccer hooligans.
Yeah. Shut up, Mingo.
Oh, sorry.
It does beg a belief, really, that there are people who are of such limited intelligence, and it is unfortunate that they happen to be in the UK.
Well, actually, I did want to provide a balanced approach to our discussion, so let me tell you about this story in Rolling Meadows, which is very, very close to us. In fact, when you were over here in the US, we probably drove through it. A dad tosses son's wrestling foe from the ring. In fact, we had this on the news. There was a video of it. There was a high school video, high school wrestling match. Okay, right. You know, where they have this circle, and it's the classic wrestling, not your WWF crap, you know. So they're having a wrestling game, and somebody's videoing it, and the kid who is winning is pinning down this kid on the ground, and all of a sudden you see coming in from left camera the father of the kid who's on the ground picking up the kid who's pinning him down and literally throwing him probably 6 foot across the floor outside of the ring, and then turning around shouting and coming at the guy with the video. So we have the same sort of thing here. Is this a sign that parents are becoming too hyped and involved in their kids' sports?
I don't think so, because it's very much isolated cases. Even these two, you know, women, and I'm sure a lot more and a lot worse, as is often proved in these news stories, comes about, and they come out, and then everybody gets all on their high horse and says, isn't it despicable, this shouldn't happen. But it isn't happening in large numbers. There are, unfortunately, just a lot of very thick and unintelligent people in this world, and to be honest, they shouldn't be given any oxygen.
As we used to say, they're a complete waste of space.
Exactly.
They are. I mean, and, you know, there should be a test, really, particularly in the United Kingdom, which is an island. We don't have that much space, that anybody who is a complete waste of space should be pushed off.
I think I failed that test. That's why I'm over here.
Yeah. Shove up. Go to the US.
I say. Oh, go on. With another topic.
All right, topic number two. We've agreed that the Darwin Awards are a good thing and people are a waste of space who are idiots. Okay. Topic number three, kayaking. Mr. Vobes, you have a kayak, correct?
I do. I have one. I have drilled it holes in it and pinned it to the wall.
Really? That's going to make it sink, isn't it?
Well, only if the house floods.
Oh, yeah. Well, you're pretty close to the ocean down there, aren't you? You are
23 feet above sea level, I am.
I thought you were 23 feet from the sea. You're broadcasting from the beach hut, right?
Eric, my lackey, has built a tower.
He has?
Yes, excellent. He's built a tower to keep us up. He uses it because, as you know, part-time he is a lifeguard.
Really? I did not know that. Wow. Whose life is he guarding?
His own.
Arnie's.
He's on top of the tower in fear of his own life.
Oh, okay. Well, I just wanted to find out what you thought about... Have you taken that out on the ocean?
I have, actually, and I'm a bit of a wimp when it comes to it because I don't like it flipping over and I need to take a lesson. But it is good fun, and I would thoroughly recommend anybody doing it, you know, particularly if you're abroad in Hawaii or anything.
You knew about that. Did you think it wobbled a lot?
It does. I mean, it does wobble, and if you're not used to it, then it can be quite intimidating.
I mean, if you're, like, top-heavy or something.
Well, no, I was bottom-heavy once I was sitting in it.
Now, the story you told me, I think, is a little... It would never happen here because of health and safety.
Yeah, well, let me give you a quick story. So I'm in a sea kayak. I said to Kim, this has got to be a wonderful thing. We've got to cross the bay, Kealakua Bay, which is where Captain Cook... landed and actually had an altercation with some natives and was killed. Now, that there should have been a note that there was something about that bay, right? So I get into this kayak. Getting in was okay, but they said there was a high wind advisory. So the surf was up a little bit. It was surging and everything. We got in okay. We paddled out. I was very, very nervous crossing the bay. It was about a mile, and it really was a gut-wrenching nightmare. Coming back was the same. But coming in, of course, you had to negotiate around the harbor wall. And as you came around the harbor wall, the surf picked you up, swept you in. That was okay because it was kind of cool. You were riding the surf. I was doing the big kahuna thing, you know. So I get around the harbor wall and I tell Kim, you know, I'm surprised we're still married after this. This is not a good thing. We were both in the same kayak. Don't go kayaking with anybody else, Richard. So, So we came around the corner of the wall and we had to negotiate in. And then what you have to do is stand up and then hook up about 3 or 4 Well, it's just about 5 feet up onto the side of the wall. Very difficult for large people, as you know I am. So so we get around the corner and we get into position and the guy says, okay, stand up, you've got to lift up. And then all of a sudden he says, hurry up, there's a big wave coming.
What?
What the hell? Unfortunately, the wave came round the corner of the wall, hit the kayak, tipped us over. We went into the water. We had on life jackets, so it was okay. I swallowed several gallons of the Pacific Ocean, came up spluttering. The lovely Kimberly hit her head on the kayak. We were bashed against the wall. It was a dice with death, I have to tell you. It was a dice with death. But eventually we scrambled onto the side, coughing and spluttering. And some people who were watching us do this on the side said, you were very brave. I said, oh, it's okay. We had on our life jackets. They said, no, we were watching. You were very brave.
is that a euphemism for you were really stupid?
Yeah, really stupid, I tell you. So anyway, that was my little tale of Hawaii. Which
remind me to stay out of a kayak. Jeez.
And you're right, Richard. There was no health and safety act there. That was just a couple of guys with a lot of tattoos.
Sounds like they were trying to get rid of you, to be honest.
Yeah. So, okay, so topic number 3, don't go in sea kayaks when there's a high surf. Last topic,
right.
USA. I guess you're coming over here again. You came over here last May.
We're coming to claim our tea bags back.
You are.
But we're not actually going to Boston. No, we're coming over, yes, the Vogue and Paul Stoneman, one of my listeners and now a very big contributor. Now that you've deserted the show, he's standing
bastard.
In your footsteps. We're coming in to explore the Blue Ridge Mountains of Virginia.
Hey, listen, Blue Ridge Mountains, hang on a minute.
Bingo, you're pretty good at that.
Yeah, there's some people up there that ain't never seen a town before.
You're not scaring me.
Now let you just drop them pants.
Drop?
Just take them right off.
You sure I'm not scaring you, Richard?
Come on down, boys. We got some special things for you.
What do you think, Richard?
Well,
they taste like fish and chips. I swear they do.
Yeah. Well, that was a long time ago, and I'm sure that when the Vogue is coming over, people will bow and scrape.
Are you sure you're not going to be bowing and scraping down?
I'm not picking up the soap.
Okay.
Neil and Bob, what?
So anyway, carry on. You're going to the Blue Ridge Mountains.
Yeah, we're going to the Blue Ridge Mountains in the search of the Lonesome Pine. And then we're doing a sort of a circle thing on the East Coast kind of thing. We're flying into Dulles Airport up to see one of our listeners, John Berger, who hopefully will be cooking more than just burgers and Big Macs. And then we're going to go up to the Pennsylvanian Grand Canyon.
Ooh!
Sounds rather yummy. Then we're going to make our way down to the Blue Ridge, and we're going down to, what is it, North Carolina, is it, where Wilmington is? We have a place called Wilmington on the South Downs, where they have the Long Man of Wilmington, which is a carved, very ancient carved symbol of a man with two sticks. Looks like a skier, to be honest. Then we're going up to Virginia Beach to see the world of tacky seaside towns and see how it compares to Blackpool.
Yes.
And then we're going to cross the Chesapeake Bridge and Tunnel, which sounds great. And then we're eventually coming up to see another of our listeners up in Philadelphia. And then back to Pennsylvania, whereupon we will be kicked out of the country in an aeroplane.
And, of course, you're going to Chesapeake Bay, as you said. That is famous for one of the foods that you really, really enjoy all the time, I know. Seafood.
Oh, love it. Seafood. Down here we got Eric, when he's not cowering for his life on top of the tower, is, of course, a keen fisherman.
Is he really?
Yes, he's often fishing his boots out of the sea. Throw them in there.
Well, now, if our listeners want to hook onto your website and find out all about that, where should they go for information?
They probably need to go to the Nut House, but they can go to www.vobes.com.
All right. Well, and last time you came out here, you were in the Midwest. Do you think you're going to see any significant differences from what you've heard?
Well, yeah, everything was very flat when we came over before in the Heartland, and we did the trip from Chicago down to San Antonio, Texas. So this time we're anticipating seeing a hell of a lot more trees and possibly some hills.
Oh, well, that'll be nice. Nothing like a couple of good mounds, is there?
And, of course, the seaside. And coming from the seaside myself, it will be a great comparison.
Yes, and you know what? Of course, you know, as you know, I was born in Worthing as well, where you're located on the south coast there. And I think the sea is definitely in our blood. Now, you weren't born in Worthing, though, were you?
No, I was born in a tiny little village in Hampshire called Liss, which is about 30 miles from the sea.
Okay, so, but then, yeah,
you know, generally you're only about 75 miles from the sea at any point in the UK.
Yeah, and I guess that's why I enjoy coming to Chicago, because it was close to what was considered a sea in Lake Michigan, but I think the sea is in our blood, you know. They say the English are a seafaring nation.
It's all the salt water, you know.
Yes. Hey, I got a question for you.
Okay.
When you're walking along the seafront and you kind of smell the sea, what do they call that? Is that the ozone? Do you say get the smell of the ozone?
Is that just get the smell of the ocean?
I thought it was the smell of the ozone. I was having a discussion / argument with the lovely Kimberly about that, and she says, I've never heard of that.
Well, it sounds rubbish to me, because the ozone is several thousand feet up in the air, and I would be slightly worried.
Yes, I think I'm going to have to go back to the Oxford English Dictionary and check that out. Thank you, Richard. Oh, sorry.
Pleasure. I said, not the dictionary, you need the brain surgeon. But anyway, yes, thank you for having me on the show. It's been absolutely wonderful. I like that beer.
Yes, well, try it. If you can get hold of Castle Lager, then you've wasted your money. No.
Yeah, that's a waste of time.
I've got a slop bucket, so I'm all right.
Okay, good. Thank you, Richard, indeed. You are an absolute star.
I am.
We'll talk to you later. Have fun, and maybe we'll catch you closer to the time, or even when you're in the US.
Indeed. Thank you, guys.
Cheers. Bye.
Thank you.
There we go. That was the lovely Richard Vobes, and you can find him more at www.vobes.com. He does a somewhat daily show, at least tries to get it out Monday through Friday. And unfortunately, he doesn't always succeed because of pressures of work. But that's more than we do, because we only do it once a fortnight, right, Linga?
That's right.
But it's almost time for us to leave, because...
Okay, put your elephant guns back in their cases and get back to the felt. It's closing time here. Down it, guys.
I'm trying to down it, but it's that bloody Castle Lager. I can't get it down. Oh, it's pretty bad, I must admit.
You need a handful of peanuts just to get thirsty again.
Yes, I know. Well, it has been absolutely an action-packed, fun day today, and I think it's time for us to get back to the normal hour-long show next time. So
yeah, this was kind of a special catch-up bonus edition where we had to catch up on a few things, and we're glad that you made it back from Hawaii safe and sound, and everything's starting to get back to normal, and we had our special friend Richard on the show today.
Well, there we go, Linga. That's the closing theme. Where can people find out more information about our show?
They can always visit us at thebritanyankee.com. They can subscribe through the Feedburner, which is totally free, as is they can find us through iTunes, Blueberry, or any other Feedburner device, Google or Yahoo, any of those. If you'd like to send us an email, send it to usbrit or lingo at thebritanyankee.com, or you can click on the old-fashioned phone at the top and send us a voicemail.
So it's good night from me.
And good night from him.
Good night, everybody. Oh, bloody hell. Another show over. My God, we had a lot to talk about there, didn't we?
This was a fun-packed show.
Yes, it was. I'm going back to the islands.
Ah, I'm getting rid of this beer.
This podcast was recorded without the aid of a safety net and with the assistance of Audacity Software and Podcast Station Software. Please visit audacity.sourceforge.net and www.podcaststation.com for more information. Opinions and views expressed on this podcast are absolutely ridiculous, and you should pay no attention to them whatsoever.